folks, and you're listening to the Truth to Power Hour right here on Air America Phoenix 1480 KPHX. The phone number, as always, 602-258-8800, 1-800-989-1480 is our toll-free number. We are, of course, streaming live on www.aaphx.com. Again, remind you, we're having our big fund drive Monday all day long, starting at 6 a.m., going till about 8 p.m. Just stop on by the station, bring us some supplies for that combat support hospital in Mosul, Iraq. Whole list of stuff we need on our website. We'll be giving you a raffle ticket for every donation you drop off. And we're going to have top of the hour. We'll be giving away Loose Change 9/11 CDs, a couple of tickets to the Dixie Chicks. Lots of fun. Come by, meet your favorite weekend host. It should be quite an event. But from here on out, for the next hour, we're going to be joined on the line from, I believe, somewhere around Denver, Colorado, an author named Judah Freed. And Judah has written a book called Global Sense, and is a sense and updating of modern update of Common Sense by Thomas Paine. Judah, welcome to the program.
Thank you for inviting me.
Glad to have you here today. I first caught wind of your work because of an article you had written about District Judge Anna Diggs Taylor and the NSA ruling. Do you want to spend some time on that first, or talk about the book first? How do you want to structure it?
Why don't we give a real short introduction to the book and then dive into talking about that ruling?
Sounds good. Tell us about your book.
Global Sense is an update of Tom Paine's Common Sense, as you said. It follows Paine's structure and logic, where Paine was concerned about monarchy and hereditary succession. I'm focusing on issues around alpha male rule and authority addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm urging instead that we focus on mindful self-rule and the practical idealism of personal democracy. And the central premise is that because we are all globally interconnected, we change the world by changing ourselves. And that means that each one of us is individually powerful because of our interconnectivity. So those people who think they are powerless, that nothing they do makes any difference, are not seeing the reality of how powerful we truly can be in everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
That's the shorthand. That's the 30-second elevator.
Well, maybe we'll get back to that once you sort of exhaust the whole NSA issue. I think it's a fascinating topic for the book, and actually it's won some awards as well. I believe it won the CIPA Evie Award for Best Personal Growth Book of the Year. That's congratulations.
Colorado Independent Publishers Association has given it the award of Best Personal Growth Book of the Year, which was quite a surprise and an honor.
Well, it's interesting. There's been a lot of talk about authoritarianism, particularly in the last week, both Obermann's screed against Donald Rumsfeld, John Dean's book about conservatives without conscience. Starting to talk more and more about these kind of issues. So I think it's a very timely book you've put out there. And, of course, again, it leads us into this whole NSA issue, another means of authoritarianism. They seem to want to listen into our conversations and the chill that has. Talk a little bit about your reaction to Judge Taylor.
Well, I was happy to see the ruling, quite honestly. My concern for quite a while has been that this legislation is the Patriot Act, which did observe the rules that are set forward in the 1978 FISA Act, has largely been, I don't know if I would say ignored, but in many respects has gone beyond what the law permits. This administration seems to feel that just because you are suspected of something, you are guilty of something.
Mm-hmm.
And this administration seems to believe that they can ignore habeas corpus, toss people in prisons, and just ignore their rights. Alexander Hamilton, a contemporary of Paine, said that, I don't remember his exact words, I've got it in the book, but it's something to the effect of that random imprisonments have been and continue to be the preferred form of every tyranny.
Right, yeah. For as long as there have been prisons. It's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned the whole notion of, a lot of the argument you hear from the other side is, well, if you haven't done anything wrong, you've had nothing to worry about. Well, in the current climate, what is wrong seems to be changing all the time, and you may be on the right side of something one day and the wrong side the next day, and unbeknownst to you, the rules have changed,
Right. And even if you are suspected of doing something wrong, that doesn't give anyone a right to violate your rights.
Right.
And we're not finding it only with Republicans that are doing this, I'm sorry to say. In the last presidential election, the Democratic candidate for president was fond of standing up in front of large crowds and saying that we're going to go kill those terrorists as soon as they kill us.
Right, yeah.
Well, they're still human beings. I totally disagree with their agenda, but they still have rights.
Mm-hmm.
And two wrongs do not make a right, no matter how you calculate the no matter how you figure the calculus of it.
Well, yeah, if we are a nation of laws, which we propose we are to be, and we have this beautiful document, the Bill of Rights, to follow, it should seem that the logical conclusion is that's the way that no man is above the Bill of Rights. But apparently this, time and time again, we see this administration overreaching that.
And the thing that Payne did that I thought was quite astounding for his time is that, remember that at the time of the American Revolution, most American colonists did not want to break away from England.
Right.
They expected us to reconcile with the king, to make nicey-nicey with King George III, and to work out our differences, we would go back to being a loyal English subject. And when he wrote Common Sense, he did a number of things in that pamphlet, which was really only 47 pages, sold for like 2 shillings.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he accomplished was he got the American colonists to begin thinking of themselves as rather than as a bunch of separate countries. You know, Georgia was one country, New York was a country, Massachusetts was a country.
Right.
You got to think, instead of being separate countries, you began thinking of them all as one country with different states. And that was a significant breakthrough.
Right.
The other thing that he did was he really put forward the idea that had been circulating in the movement called the Enlightenment since the 1600s, that the king is subject to the law. Now, this really goes back to Magna Carta,
mm-hmm.
Which is hundreds of years before that. But it had really become very clear that, number one, people begin to believe that we didn't really need kings to begin with. That comes back to the authority addiction idea. But he was saying that even if you do have kings, the king must be subject to the law. And he made a very strong case within Global Sense, talking about how King George III had told Parliament, "You shall make no laws but those that I like."
Mm-hmm.
We see very much
right.
Parallel like that today,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I think you made an interesting point in a lot of what Payne accomplished was getting the states, what are now states, to think of themselves differently. I mean, I think that's kind of the point you made about your book, is like going within, changing the way you think about things first as a means of revolution, basically, evolving the revolution.
Yeah. I'm an advocate of evolution and revolution.
Right, yeah. Makes perfect sense. Hey, I got a caller just popped in. Obviously, has a question for you. Do you mind taking a phone call?
Certainly, I'm happy to take a call.
All right, let's take one. This is Mark in Scottsdale. Welcome to the program, Mark. Mark, you there?
Hello, Mark.
Nope. We lost Mark.
Mark, call back.
Yep. So anyway, let's get into the book a little bit more. I'd just like to just talk more about your book and Payne's book. I would like to just kind of explore that a little bit more. So I think I don't think most of our listeners has read Thomas Paine's Common Sense. Or if they did, they probably read it in 7th or 8th grade civics class. So just kind of bring us up to date a little bit about the basic points.
Sure. Those, of course, presume that they even have a civics class anymore, which is another...
Well, actually, I just found out, I went to a teacher back-to-school night earlier this week, and my son has a civics class. He's in 8th grade.
Amen.
Yeah, I was thrilled.
That's good. So oftentimes, American history and political science is not taught in the primary or even the secondary grades, and that's scary to me. But how can we be responsible for governing ourselves if we don't even understand the concepts?
Well, exactly. I think Jefferson and Adams had written that, you know, without an educated populace, that democracy cannot work unless the people know what the issues are and understand them. So,
one of the few points at which those gentlemen agreed.
Yep. That's true. Well, until later in life. That's also one of those fascinating stories. They're sort of coming to terms later in life and dying within seconds of one another on the 4th of July, 50
well,
years
seconds,
to the
yeah.
day. Yeah, it's amazing story.
Yeah, quite astounding. And what's so interesting is I've done my research into their history. I discovered that there's a wonderful book about Adams by, I believe it's McCullough.
Yes, it was. Yeah, I have that book, yeah.
And one of the points that he makes in there, he doesn't come quite out and say it, but if you really read his history very carefully, you discover that John Adams is actually rather jealous of Thomas Paine.
Mm-hmm.
Because Paine managed to say in very simple words and persuade the public of what John Adams is trying to get people to do. I mean, Adams was one of the first really calling for independence.
Right.
From England. And, but although he had written essays and had written some very well thought out pieces, Adams was even just sort of made this insulting comment about that it sounded like this thing written by some guy who had escaped from Newgate Prison in England. truth is painted, never been in Newgate Prison.
Right.
But,
Adams was never really known for his tact, I guess.
he was not known for that.
A bristly character.
But the interesting thing is that when Paine actually was in prison in France, this was after he had written Common Sense, after he had written the crisis papers during the war that has that famous line, "These are the tri-men souls."
Mm-hmm.
And after he had written The Rights of Man, which defended the ideals of the French Revolution, although not necessarily the practical expression of it, Paine had gone to France and with Jefferson and others, and Madison and others, had been declared members of the Republic and citizens of the Republic. And in fact, Paine was elected to the French Assembly, representing a particular district in France. And he became part of what was called the Girondist Party. The French is not that strong. I'm probably mispronouncing it. But that faction lost out in essentially a quote-unquote palace coup to Robespierre's party.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the terror started. And so all of a sudden, here was Paine, who, because of the writings and the Rights of Man, had been declared and convicted a traitor to England, and finding himself in France and imprisoned in France because he was an Englishman who was at war with France.
Wow.
So he's languishing in prison, and he only just barely escaped the guillotine because when the people, whoever was doing it, came through and marked a big red X on the door of everybody who was going to be taken to the guillotine that day, Paine was sitting in his cell with the door open because he was sick and the doctor was seeing him. They painted it on his door, and so when the students came to take him out to the guillotine, they didn't see the X, and he survived.
Oh, wow. That's a stroke of luck there. Hey, Jude,
when you come back, we'll talk about how Adams
did
into that.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. Hey, we'll be right back with Judah Fried on the other side of the break. It's the Truth to Power Hour, Air America Phoenix, 1480 KPHX. If you have a question for Judah or want to jump in on the conversation, 602-258-8800 or 1-800-989-1480. We'll be right back after these important messages from our sponsors. Streaming live on www.aaphx.com. Go check out our website, folks, for a full list of supplies we're hoping to raise, things requested by the soldiers in Mosul, Iraq, working at the Combat Support Hospital there. We're on the line with Judah Fried. He's the author of Global Sense, a modern updating of Thomas Paine's Common Sense. We're talking a little bit about the early days of American history, looking at the recent NSA ruling and George Bush and the overall the abuses of the current administration and how that reconciles with the founder's vision. Judah, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much.
We were talking a little bit about Thomas Paine as being imprisoned in Europe, and before you mentioned as we were going out, you want to talk a little bit about Adams.
Before I do that, for those listeners who are online while they're listening, I have at my website, they can go to judahfried.com, that's Judah with an H, judahfried.com, and click on the link either for the book Global Sense or look for the link for Thomas Paine and just put that into the search bar. But I have a Thomas Paine biography up there, and they get a lot more detail about his life. Also, I have on the site, if you're interested, they can download a free report called 76 Ways to Change the World Today.
Oh, cool.
So,
your book was forwarded by Tom Hartman. We're big fans
of Tom Hartman.
His show airs at night over here, but big fan of his work.
Yeah, me too. So the other thing that I would mention, coming back now to looking at the American Revolution, are you familiar with the Alien and Sedition Act?
Yes. Please talk, for our listeners' sake, why don't you expound on that a little bit?
Sure. In one of the first things that John Adams signed, one of the early things that he signed after he became president was the Alien Sedition Act. And these are fundamentally aimed at suppressing Thomas Jefferson,
mm-hmm.
who was representing the idea of as much as possible direct democracy, or at least more citizen participation. Adams had become part of the Federalists. And originally, there were no political parties in the country, but during Adams' administration, the unity under Washington pretty much dissolved, and the country very much split along what became the party line. And where Jefferson was pushing for the individual states being more autonomous, Adams wanted to see everything pretty much centralized and became more and more prone towards what some people would describe as almost a Tory or a monarchical kind of picture of what government should be. and he wanted to consolidate a lot of power under himself. I mean, he still never really lost his ideals, but the people that he associated with kind of in some ways led him down the path, and in some ways his own personality led him into wanting sort of this authoritarian kind of government. And so the Alien Sedition Act essentially made it, there were a series of acts, and they made it so that if you were not an American citizen, all kinds of things could be done to you that were not allowed if you were a citizen. So the Sedition Act basically made it so that anything against the government, you could be put in prison.
Wow.
And it came to the point that if you bought the wrong book, you could be investigated. And I think Jefferson made this wonderful quote to the effect of that he was amazed that someone could be investigated for buying a book, and in fact criminally investigated for that. So also similar to something we see today.
Right, yeah.
So the reason why this ties back to what was going on with Payne is that when he was in prison, he kept on trying to get the Americans to get him out.
Mm-hmm.
And he, through his representatives, sent appeals, and the person who was at that point the American ambassador in France didn't like Payne. He was pretty much a royalist in a lot of ways,
right.
And definitely a federalist. And he corresponded with Adams and basically said, well, you know, he should just stay in prison. And, you know, in some regards, he's probably safer there than getting out on the street. So let's just, you know, keep him there. And so while Payne was in prison, he began writing what became The Age of Reason, which was his book that basically talks about the problems with organized religion. Some people think Payne was an atheist, but he was far from it. He was a very profoundly spiritual man, but he was a deist.
Right,
believe in
right.
one God.
As were much of the founding fathers, particularly Jefferson and Washington.
Adams wasn't. Adams was a unitarian, but Jefferson and Washington and Franklin definitely, mm-hmm. and Madison as well. They were deists. Most of them were also Freemasons, as was Payne. And so as he wrote the beginnings of The Age of Reason while he was in prison, after Jefferson narrowly won the presidency to become the third American president, at that point the book was ready to come out and got some success in Europe. And the Europeans just sort of looked at it and said, oh, well, you know, okay, the guys aren't very happy about the church, and, you know, they were okay with that in some respects. But he sent a copy home to America, and a copy was given to Jefferson by Payne's printer. And Jefferson wrote back and says, oh, well, you know, this is a pretty interesting book, and just wrote this little personal note to the printer. Says, you know, this could counter a lot of political heresies of our day. Well, the printer, without Jefferson's permission, definitely without Payne's permission, published Jefferson's little note as a preface.
Wow.
And so when the book came out in America, it ignited a firestorm against Jefferson and against Payne. So when Jefferson was president, he invited Payne to come back, offered to give him passage on an American ship, and Payne wasn't willing to have the taxpayers pay for it. He decided to come back under his own purse, which by then was pretty dwindled because he spent so much time in prison, and he was also pretty sickly. So when he came back, he was met at the dock by a jeering crowd that threw rocks at him, spit on him, and he later just told some of the few friends that he had left that he regretted ever coming back to America. Because he died in poverty and pretty much obscurity with children potting him in the street.
Wow.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Now, I always find this interesting because I've been a big student of Jefferson. I've always, of all the founders, he's the one I've always been most drawn to and most fascinated by. A lot of people don't realize that when Jefferson was elected when he came into office in 1801, it was essentially a second American Revolution, because under Washington, to a lesser extent, but Adams particularly, they had strayed pretty far from the initial notion of the Bill of Rights. Obviously, the Alien and Sedition Act is a huge element of that. Maybe you could clear up one aspect of something else. Now, my understanding is that James Madison, who was Jefferson's probably protege and probably closest political ally, he was the one who authored the Federalist Papers. Isn't that correct?
Well, he had a role in it.
Right.
But at the same token, he wasn't really a staunch Federalist.
Right.
It was Madison who actually got Payne out of prison.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah,
and in fact,
it always confused me, that notion, because I knew Madison was involved in the Federalist Papers, but I didn't realize that. I think that probably the term Federalist probably changed in the time that he wrote it, and then by the time the sort of the Adams people had kind of adopted, and even to this day, Newt Gingrich always seems to cite the Federalist Papers when he's talking for diminishing government and a lesser role for the government. So,
which is so ironic, because the Federalists actually were in charge of a strong centralized
government.
They wanted to consolidate power in what later would become Washington, D.C.
Right. Well, I guess in Madison's context, it was more or less trying to unite the various states into one government, not necessarily, laying out the roadmap for that structure and that power, but mostly thought that we needed a strong central government to just sort of unify the states, so we weren't 13 separate countries, in essence. And I guess that the extension of that, when Adams got a hold of it, kind of took it to a whole new level.
Yeah, and I won't claim expertise in the life of Mr. Madison, so
you might
have a listener that might be able to answer this question, but my understanding is that I think you labeled it quite right, that he was concerned about how the country would fracture, and it was also, if my understanding is correct, he shared with Paine the concern around slavery, and saw that as a divisive issue.
Right.
But some interesting things about Paine that most people don't know is that he wrote some of the first tracts against slavery ever published in the United States.
Wow.
In fact, shortly after he came to the country, he ended up editing the Pennsylvania Magazine and wrote one of the first tracts against slavery while doing that. And then a few weeks later, helped co-found one of the first abolitionist societies.
Interesting.
Not only that, Paine was also one of the first writers in defending the rights of women. He never overtly came out and called for women to have the vote, but he still defended their rights.
Huh.
He also came out against cruelty to animals.
Wow. Interesting.
Right ahead of his time in a lot of ways.
Hey, I can tell we're just about at the bottom of the hour. We've got another break. When we get back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about common sense, sort of its reach, its scope, its effect on early America, and then we'll kind of launch into, the parallels with your book from there. How's that sound?
Excellent idea.
All right, you're listening to the Truth to Power Hour right here on Air America Phoenix, 1480 KPHX. If you want to get in on the conversation, 602-258-8800 or 1-800-989-1480. I'm here with Judah Fried, author of Global Sense. We'll be right back after these messages.
We sang up from a past rooted in pain.
Truth to Power Hour, right here on Air America Phoenix, 1480 KPHX. We are joined on the phone from Denver, Colorado. We're speaking with Judah Fried. He's the author of Global Sense, a modern updating of Thomas Paine's Common Sense. We've been spending a lot of time talking about early history of our republic. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I overtalked you. I was just saying. I hope some listeners will call in. I really would enjoy expanding our conversation.
Me too. What I find a lot of times is when I have guests on, the callers tend to shy away because they enjoy listening so much. And when I get my guests off, then the calls flood in. Oh, I should have thought of this. But anyway, hey, the importance of common sense in its time. Obviously, we're a fairly small country population-wise, and it was read at the time by a pretty significant number of the people. Just talk a little bit about the overall sort of the scope and the effect it had on the early settlers here, or the early patriots here.
Sure. Common Sense was originally published on January 10, 1776. Originally, it was published anonymously. I think Paine was afraid of being arrested, understandably, because of strong Tory sentiment, especially in Philadelphia and in New England. So, but it quickly became very popular, circulated. It was originally printed by R. Bell on 3rd Street in Philadelphia. And shortly after it came out, word reached America that King George III had declared all the colonies in rebellion against the crown. And that basically said, well, hey, if the king is going to call us rebels, then we might as well be rebels.
Mm-hmm.
And we might as well, if the king's afraid of us becoming independent, then what the heck, let's become independent. So that was starting to circulate just in normal daily conversation. And then along comes common sense, and that really turned the tide. So what he was able to accomplish was persuade the Americans not only that they belonged to really one country, that it made no sense for a tiny island to rule a continent half a world away,
mm-hmm.
but that the Americans not only should rebel, that the king was violating their rights, but that they could afford to actually win a revolutionary war. And he laid out in the fourth part of his book very practical ways in which they could get money from either France or Spain if they declared their independence, that to be able to support the revolution, that they could never get if they remained loyal to the crown. So he gave them not only just the ideal that it should be, that the nation should be independent, but he showed them how they could actually gain their independence in very practical terms. And as a consequence, Common Sense sold about 125,000 copies with only 2.5 million colonists.
Wow.
in the colonies in the first few months. And over the lifetime of the pamphlet, so he republished it in 1891, over his lifetime, it sold somewhere between 400 to 500,000 copies.
Wow.
It did not sell as many copies as Rights of Man, which was the number one bestseller of the entire 18th century in the U.S. and Europe.
Hmm.
But, that was pretty astounding. Today, if a book can get 1% of its potential readership, it's considered
Well, it just seems like it was such an influential piece of work. And as you said, just basically giving, for the first time, people defined themselves as that there was such a thing as an American, that we that we could consider ourselves a country or a group, or we had this commonality about us that
mm-hmm.
was there. I'd just like to explore some of the ways that your work and your book was A, inspired by this, and A, sort of mirrors Paine's work. Just talk about some of the ways that you tie the two together.
Well, the genesis of the book actually goes back to 1997, when I used Common Sense as a framework for writing an essay about the governance of the Internet. This was at the time when the federal government was privatizing the Internet. And that was actually what started my website, was that essay. And shortly after 9/11, I found myself writing just all these things about how our dependence on authority left us so we're so vulnerable to tyranny, and how this attack was being used to justify usurping our natural rights.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was writing, this was in late September, I suddenly just woke up one morning, and it might have been in the middle of the night, I don't remember which, but I remember waking up and realizing that the essay I had done several years before would be a perfect framework for talking about what's going on in the world now. And so I sat down and started writing. Paine's original pamphlet was only 16,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
My first draft was about 120,000 words.
Wow. Well, lots happened between now and then. So.
Yeah, the book now has gone through 7 rewrites, actually I guess 8 rewrites, if you count the last round of editing.
All right.
And it's down to a little less than 50,000 words. Got front matter and back matter, of course, makes it longer, but it's still on 200 pages. The key thing that's going on with it now is that there's the book is officially really launching next week. It's up on Amazon. It's up at BarnesandNoble.com. Should have it up by next week. People can also go to my website and get it. Some people might want to know is I'm donating 10% of all of my net income from the book to literacy projects. So If people do decide they want to buy the book and they buy it from me, that means I actually can end up getting more money to literacy.
Oh, that's great.
That's a new motivation.
Yeah, that's a great,
that's
very noble of you. Thank
yeah.
you.
It's with light and self-interest, because I want there to actually be people out there who read books.
Who can read, yeah. No kidding. Hey, I want to, quoting your website here, it says, "For those feeling fear, anger, or despair from endless wars, the loss of our rights and liberties, or the assaults on our environment, Global Sense by Judah Fried advocates practical idealism." Now, I know in a lot of people's minds that the notion of practicality and idealism are, somewhat of a dichotomy. I'd like you to kind of maybe expand on practical idealism as it applies to the current situation.
Yeah, well, this comes back to this whole notion of our global power. If it's true that we're all interconnected, and you can understand this, it's the idea of the communication weaves the web of culture, that the way we interact within ourselves affects the way we interact with other people.
Mm-hmm.
The way we interact with other people affects the relationships in our families, which affects the way we interact in our communities, in our workplaces, and it's just sort of a daisy chain from inside of our own hearts and minds all the way out into the global level, environmental ecology, and this is on the spiritual level as well as on the material, physical, political, economic level. We're constantly hearing about the world being economically interdependent. It's the same concept.
Right.
So if you take a pebble, drop it into a pond, you can see ripples radiating out, right?
Right, the butterfly effect, right?
The butterfly sneezing, causing a tsunami.
Right, right.
Now we know what happened. That's how it happened last year. It was a butterfly. It wasn't an earthquake under the ocean.
That's right. There's a whole bunch of butterflies,
yeah. Yeah. So short of my age here, when I hear that, I usually think of the old Moody Blues songs. But,
mm-hmm.
So, power of 10 billion butterflies, however the lyrics went. But yeah. You know, the idea is that if we can realize that we're all globally interconnected, that everything that we think, say, and do changes reality for ourselves, for our community, for our workplaces, for our families, our nation, our world, and on and out, we realize that we're amazingly powerful. So in part four of Global Sense, where Payne was putting his energies and talking about how the Americans could practically rebel against England leaving, getting their independence, I'm talking about how we can practically change what we do in daily life and get our interdependence so that we can live in peace and have democracy at the same time and move more towards direct democracy, or what I like to call at least a direct republic.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see much more referendums, so instead of a president signing off on the bills, that when it comes to major changes in policy, that we, the people, have the right to decide.
Right.
And how many of your listeners, for example, if they could have voted on the invasion of Iraq, would have said yes?
Right.
They might have said yes to invading Afghanistan after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
But I bet if we'd been given a vote of whether or not we're going to invade Iraq, I bet that would have been defeated.
Yeah.
If we'd been given a vote on...
pretty good bet, I think. Hey, we've got a couple callers lining up here, Judy.
Wonderful. Hey, we've stimulated.
Let's go to Pam in Phoenix. She's first in the queue. Pam, welcome to the show.
Oh, good afternoon, Judah and Jeff.
Hi, Pam.
Hi. You know, I'm looking at your website as well, and I'm sitting here thinking that when the student is ready, the teacher appears. I have really been doing a lot of soul searching. You know, I've gone through a lot of despair. I've gone through a lot of anger. And a lot of that is in conflict with, you know, what my philosophical spiritual beliefs are, you know, dwelling in those states. And I really do believe, and I've been, you know, attempting in my own life to find that personal introspection and working on myself and balancing that with what's going on in the world. And as I'm reading your website here, it sounds very much, it's reminding me very much of Gandhi, because I know that that was the source, the base of everything that he did over those decades. Was it was always inner change first. It was always personal change. His book, you know, his lessons in truth, you know, that every single thing, nothing was too small to substantiate a lesson for him, a spiritual lesson, an inner lesson, a lesson in truth, and in ahimsa and practicing nonviolence and what it really means. And I'm really fascinated with what you're presenting here, and I definitely want to get your book.
Well, thank you for that. So I was privileged to be in Gandhi's home in Mumbai a few years ago, and I walked out of there, and my driver immediately wanted to take me to the nearest house of ill repute, and you know, I wanted to take me to the Indian Ocean so I could stand there and just feel quiet inside, because I was speechless. I walked out of there unable to say a word. I was so powerfully moved just by being in his house, feeling his energy there.
Yeah.
So I think what Gandhi did, what Martin Luther King did, and in his own way, even Nelson Mandela, these people who are willing to say that the way to change the world is by changing ourselves, I believe the path. And I mean, for those of you who are Christian, I believe you actually look to the founder of Christianity. That's you know, that's what Jesus was talking about. I believe the path to world peace starts with inner peace, fundamentally.
It's kind of a leap to start to recognize that what we're seeing is really a manifestation of our collective consciousness. And if it weren't manifesting through George Bush, there would be someone else in his place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yes, we have to address the immediacy, you know, in a practical way of what's happening. We must. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the process of justice and democracy, and we must do that. But we also, at the same time, we have to watch our own inner state of mind, our inner thoughts, and what's really going on inside of us. So I appreciate your work. I'm definitely going to get the book. Thank you
so
much.
I appreciate that. I hope that you'll download the little report on there in 7 to 6 ways you can change the world. And before you go, I want to just ask a question to you. To think about what you're doing every day that makes a difference, has an impact on the world.
Thanks.
Hey, Pam, thanks for your call. Hey, Judah, we got one more break. We got one more segment coming up here with Judah Fried, author of Global Sense, a sort of modern updating of Thomas Paine's Common Sense, talking about, changing the world by changing yourself. And we're going to deal more with that on the other side of the break. We have Randall and Tempe holding. We'll get to your call as soon as we get back. You're listening to the Truth to Power Hour. I'm Jeff Farias. It's Air America Phoenix, 1480 KPHX. 602-258-8800. We probably get time for one other caller, I think, on the other side, but we'll see. Really enjoying this discussion. I hope you are, too. Stick around. We'll be right back after these important messages.
The names and a few other changes. If you talk about me, the story's the same one. But I got an emptiness deep inside.
We are back, folks. It's the Truth to Power Hour right here on Air America Phoenix, 1480 KPHX. Getting a lot of thumbs up in the booth there over that Neil Diamond tune there. Diamond fans around here. Hey, I'm talking with Judah Fried. He's an author of the book Global Sense. It's due out on Amazon next week, you said, Judah?
Yeah, well, it's out on Amazon now.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
it's on Amazon. Have it next week, or people can order it now from my website. And they can also get to their own bookstore and just have their own bookstore order. Any bookstore in the country and the world can order it.
I recommend you go to the website. It's judahfried.com. That's JudahFried.com. Check it out. There's also a great pamphlet there, 76 Ways to Change the World. Go check that out, and really fascinating stuff. Hey, I want to get to a phone caller. He's been holding patiently, and then we'll talk a little bit more on the other side. Randall, welcome to the program.
Well, hey, Jeff, great show, and thank you, Judah, for bringing Tom Paine into the 21st century. So many people don't understand history, and that's why we're condemned to repeat it, I'm afraid.
Sadly true.
First of all, I want to thank you for plugging AZ Poll Worker, Jeff. I just want to add we're still looking for a few registered Democrats that want to hand count the ballots the 3 days after the primary, the 13th through the 15th. They shoot us an email to azpollworker@yahoo.com. We'll give them the details about that. But, the meaning of the word federalist, you know, it went through changes and it's still being redefined by whoever wants to use it. The word appeaser, the word Nazi, you know. The word Republican has been hijacked by a bunch of people who are not Republicans and they're not conservatives. They're radical monarchists, basically, that want to sell the U.S. to the highest bidder. And we even have a kind of a tension within the Democratic Party between the real populist grassroots DNC wing and the more elitist Beltway CS double C and D triple C wing that think they know what's best for us. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm always... encouraging people to give money to the DNC and empower Howard Dean and the 50-state campaign, and do not give any more money to the senators who are asking for money for their leadership PAC, or to the DSCC or the DCCC, because all that does is perpetuate their little power base in Washington. Now, it's okay to give money to Barbara Boxer, because that empowers Barbara, and she's a real progressive. Real progressives have leadership PACs, and it's okay to support them, but the DNC really needs to raise some money in order to... maximize its power and balance the scales within the party.
Well, I'd like to make a proposal, if you don't mind. I think progressives, no matter how they might label themselves, are beginning more and more to become united in their opposition to what's going on in the world today, but they're not really united with a common vision. And I believe that's part of the reason why the anti-war movement in the 70s fell apart when we pulled out of Vietnam, because they were never really united for something, they were united against something.
Right.
What I'd like to see is to really pull together around a common vision of the kind of future we want to make. I was doing some work with the Denver Democratic Party here,
And I really ran into some opposition every time I said we should really start pushing the Democratic Party towards more participatory democracy rather than so much representative democracy.
Exactly.
Which is what the Republic should be. And the place where I think we could really find some great allies is if progressives were to unite with libertarians. I mean the real libertarians, not the ones that just want to have an excuse to get away with whatever they can get away with. But the people that actually want to take true personal and social responsibility for our freedom, who want to have less government, who really think that the proper role of government is simply to defend us from the abuses of corporations and the abuses of even the government itself.
Yeah.
Small government, limited government. And I consider myself sort of a progressive libertarian or a libertarian progressive, very much like Keynes. But I think if progressives and libertarians would unite, the front they would pose would transform the political landscape of this country.
Absolutely. The one thing that I had to say about that is there's a false frame that's been sold to us by people like Ronald Reagan and Barry Goldwater and people like that, that the government is something separate from you and me, and it's not true. We are the government. There's nothing wrong with the government.
The government belongs to us. We do not belong to the government.
Right. There is nothing wrong with the government that we can't fix if we get busy and give it some adult supervision, which it so badly, badly needs.
This is where that authority addiction comes in. We so much want some power higher and greater than ourselves to tell us what to do because we're afraid of the responsibility of how powerful we truly are, I believe.
Yeah. And we can't just vote for Jim Peterson and vote for Harry Mitchell and then forget about him for 2 years or 6 years. We have to actually tell them what we want them to do while they're there. We can't just complain that they don't do what we want or they're not progressive enough for us or whatever. You know, we have to tell them what we want, make sure that they hear our voices as loud as they hear the voices of the millionaires that are going to be talking to them when they're in Washington.
Amen to that.
That's
and we need to actually get out and vote.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Too many people don't bother voting because they think their vote doesn't count. The ballot box is owned by so-and-so and such and such. But that's, you know, even with the corruptions of it, if we were at this coming election, it would show up in such astounding numbers that even any voting machine tampering that might go on, if we show up in such astounding numbers as libertarians or as even genuine conservatives don't like what's going on today because they want to conserve our freedom.
That's right.
But if we show up in such astounding numbers and say no to this kind of aristocracy of the monarchical people that want us to be serving the kings instead of ruling ourselves, if we're willing to show up and vote and say yes to the people who are really going to represent global thinking in the world, if we're going to show up and really vote for those people who are going to say, I'm going to empower you to have your life work, I'm not going to fix it for you, I'm not going to be a codependent enabler, but I'm going to help you to really claim power over your own life.
And
we support those issues and we support those candidates, our numbers will be so huge that even the corruption of the voting machine tampering will not be able to defeat us.
I don't want to say ditto, but ditto.
Hey, Randall, thanks for the call, and thanks for being part of the conversation
this afternoon. Thank you, Jeff.
Always good talking to you, buddy. Thanks for all your work. I just want to touch on, we got just a little bit of time left. I just want to touch on one notion that actually kind of occurred to me on your website and media. I think the greatest weapon that the current administration wields over us is fear.
Yeah.
And what you're talking about is fixing ourselves first, coming to terms with ourselves, empowering ourselves, and you pretty much take that weapon away from them. You disable that weapon. If you can overcome your fear and your frustrations, and again, that's why I think your approach seems to make so much sense. Fix your own self first, and then you can triumph over the fear and anger and despair that a lot of us feel about where our country is going. And then, essentially, you take their biggest weapon away from them. Am I on the right track with that?
I'm totally with you on this,
okay.
And I'm really grateful that you're able to see it. I think if we realize that we're globally interconnected, we realize how powerful we are, and then a lot of that fear loses its power over us.
I mean,
the fear is natural. It's an organic, biophysiological response to a scary situation.
It's a survival instinct. Yeah.
The thing is that we should not be afraid, at least, I'm not going to say should, but I advise that we're not, that we do not let our fear of fear stop us.
Right.
Roosevelt had a famous line, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid of being afraid. It's a perfectly natural response, but don't let your fear stop you.
Right.
I'm supporting us and really claiming our power, making a difference every single day in what we think, say, and do. I mean, if we visualize a brighter future, that's, thoughts are things. Things affect other things.
Yeah.
And we can transform it just by changing our thoughts, by changing the way we interact with each other day to day. If we I mean, for us men, the hardest thing for us to do is to make that scary journey, that 18 inches from our brains to our hearts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm active in an organization called the Mankind Project, which helps men to come into authentic manhood.
Right.
If we men stop competing to try and control the world and to control women, and really find peace inside ourselves, the world will be transformed, I believe.
Judith, thank you so much. I've enjoyed this conversation a great deal with you. That music means my show is just about over. It's judahfreed.com, J-U-D-A-H-F-R-E-E-D.com. Go check it out. The book is called Global Sense. Thanks to Sean Ryan. Everything you heard came through his nimble fingers. Thanks to Jamie for working the phones. Thanks to all the hard working here at KPHX. Fred McChesney coming up. Judith, thank you so much.
Say it often.
Say it loud.
Republicans, stay at national.